الأشواق وفيه محاسن الأخلاق والقرآن.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable Discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
A warm welcome once again, dear listeners, from the beating heart of Tehran. I'm truly excited to guide you through another inspiring day on Iran Radio. We've lined up a mix of content, uplifting stories, thoughtful discussions, and the latest global updates, all carefully chosen to enrich your day. So stay with us and let's take a look at what's ahead. Our next program is The Ocean of Dua, an incredibly deep dive into spiritual supplications. We'll reflect on the rich spiritual heritage of Islamic supplications and ziyarat texts passed down from the Ahlul Bayt, as beautifully preserved in collections like Mafatihul Jinan. These sacred texts are a guide for the soul, leading to divine intimacy, moral awareness, and profound reflection. Then it's time for another segment of Radio Productions. Next up, Spring of Truth unveils the profound vision of Imam Khomeini. May Allah bless his soul. This program presents English translations of selected statements and speeches from the founding father of the Islamic Revolution delivered on various occasions. Following that, the Gate of Knowledge reveals the timeless wisdom of Nahjul Balagha. This program is dedicated to explaining and illustrating the profound moral, ethical, spiritual, and social teachings found within this incredible text. The Ocean of Dua is coming up later, so stay tuned.
The Ocean of Dua.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear brothers and sisters in faith, listeners of RIB English Radio. You're listening to the program, The Ocean of Dua, where we discuss different supplications, their significance, and some of the concepts that we can understand in those supplications and each excerpt and passage of those supplications. In this episode, we want to talk about some of the excerpts and passages of Dua al-Sabah, which means the morning prayer. Let's listen to the first passage of this beautiful supplication, and we'll be right back.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Allahumma ya man dala'a lisan al-sabahi binutq taballuji wa sarraha qita' al-layl al-mudlimi bighayahibi talajluji wa atqana sun'a al-falak al-dawari fi maqadir tabarruji وشعشع ضياء الشمس بنور تأججي
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. So you just listened to the first passage of Dua al-Sabah. And Allah has taught this supplication to our Prophet Muhammad. And he also taught it to Imam Ali alayhi salam. So this supplication is mostly attributed to our first Imam Amir al-Mu'minin Ali ibn Abi Talib. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful. اللهم يا من دلع لسان الصباح بالنطق تبلجه. O Allah, O He who extended the morning's tongue in the speech of its dawning. Now here, تبلجه, some have translated as radiance, the brightness of the speech of the morning. Now, one thing I have to say is that we have limited knowledge and we won't be able to understand and interpret the supplications from our ma'sumeen without relying on Islamic beliefs from the verses of the Quran and the narrations. Of course, we have aql as well, we have logic. But at the end of the day, what we interpret might not be 100% correct. We have limited knowledge. And the things we say about these prayers are not 100% correct, okay? So they might be really, really close to the truth, but they're not 100% accurate all the time. Here Allah is saying, يَا مَنْ دَلَعَ لِسَانَ الصَّبَاحِ بِنُطْقِ تَبَلُّجِ. He extends the tongue of the morning, بِنُطْقِ تَبَلُّجِ, the speech of its dawning. We have to pay attention that the supplications that we have from the Ma'sumeen, these are not just like poetry and pieces of prose or poetry, and they contain a lot of symbolic things and metaphors, and they have this beauty in them. No, it's not just the beauty, it's actually the reality. So when the Ma'sum says, لسان الصباح, it means the morning actually has a tongue and it actually speaks, even though we can't fully grasp what that really means. Because we human beings, we like to compare everything to ourselves. When we hear lisan, we quickly think about our own tongues. For example, when we read yad or waj in the Quran, some might think, okay, yad means hand. Allah doesn't have a hand. How is that possible? لَيْسَ كَمِثْلِهِ شَيْءٍ. We have to understand it in another way without comparing it to ourselves. What do we do with our hand? A lot of the things that we do is through our hands. So it means the power to do certain things. لِسَان means to convey a message, to speak the truth, to show everyone the truth. And that is why we say light also. Allahu nuru samawati wal ard. Allah is the light of the heavens and earth. Does this mean that it's a physical light? Well, not necessarily. Okay. So here, nutq means that the morning, this is what it could mean. I'm not saying this is what it means. The morning, first of all, has mantiq. That means it is not something without a spirit. It's not just a physical reality. It's something that truly exists. It has a lisan and it speaks. How does it speak? When it's bright, everyone can see the morning. Everything lights up. It's as if it's speaking to the world. Let's take a quick break and we'll be right back and we'll discuss this passage of the supplication of Sabah.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. In the name of Allah, the All Beneficent, the All Merciful. O Allah, O He who extended the morning's tongue in the speech of its dawning. Dispatch the fragments of the dark night into the gloom of its stammering. Made firm the structure of the turning spheres in the measure of its display. And beam forth the brightness of the sun through the light of its blazing.
Thank you, Allah, now that we're here, feeling so good about all the things that we went through, knowing that God is pleased with us too. It's not a dream, this is so true, and we know we'll be here forever. The feeling is indescribable, knowing that this is our reward.
Brothers and sisters and listeners of Arabic English Radio, this is the ocean of dua that you're listening to. So we were talking about the first passage of the supplication of Sabah. What happens when the sun rises and, you know, it's morning? Why does the Masum say the speech? Because when you say something, everyone can hear it, right? Even if it's dark. This is the quality of sabah. When it shows itself, it's as if everyone can hear its speech because it's so bright. No one can say, no one can deny that it's morning. And also, another way we can comprehend this is that what happens when it becomes morning, the birds start to sing, all the animals wake up, human beings wake up, we hear all these sounds. So this could also mean the speech of the dawn or morning. We will talk more about this supplication in the upcoming episodes of The Ocean of Dua. Thank you for being with us. I leave you in the care of Allah. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
It's too late. If you haven't spoken up yet, it might be too late for you. This is your call to say something and not let history judge you for what you should have done.
There once was a day when we were shadows in the street, paper thin excuses crumbling at our feet. Screens glowed brightly, selling fear and doubt. The truth bled quietly, seldom spoken out. But today it's on the news again that the Zionist entity has murdered Palestinians and burned their city. Savagery is in their blood, genocide their game. The world is watching live as they enter the hall of shame. Don't they see nations waking up? Don't they see people rising up? Don't they see that we won't bow? It's too late to stop us now. It's too late to stop us now. It's too late. Can't you see the land is breaking? It's too late. Can't you see the children dying? It's too late. Let's not be judged by history. Should have done to save humanity. It's too late. Oh, it's too late. Oh, it's too late. America gives the go-ahead, then it sends in bombs. Israel calls it self-defense and murders without qualms.
Since when has killing children become a source of pride? Silence must be broken if you want to turn the tide. It's time we made the right choice, our lives may be on the line. It's time we raised our voice, chanting free, free Palestine. The police can do what they want to do, detain one or two. The thousands of millions are coming through, a move they cannot undo. Don't they see nations waking up? Don't they see people rising up? Don't they see that we won't bow? It's too late to stop us now. It's too late to stop us now. It's too late. Can't you see the land is breaking? It's too late. Can't you see the children dying? It's too late. Let's not be judged by history for what we should have done to save humanity. It's too late. Oh, it's too late. Oh, it's too late. Oh, it's too late. Oh, it's too late.
There are activists who do not just challenge systems, they confront them head on. They blur the lines between protest and provocation, pushing public discourse into uncomfortable but necessary territory. Their work is often polarizing, but it's rooted in a deep conviction to dismantle injustice. My guest today is one such activist. Welcome to SORP. I am Bahman Roy.
Calla Walsh is an American political activist, writer and organizer known for her outspoken views on US foreign policy, anti-imperialism and Palestinian solidarity. She is a member of the Democratic Socialists of America and co-chair of the National Network on Cuba. Walsh has contributed to different media outlets and has participated in delegations to Cuba and Syria. In 2023, she was arrested during direct actions targeting Elbit Systems, an Israeli military contractor, as part of a work with Palestine Action US.
Calla Walsh, it's a pleasure to have you on SORP.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. I know you must be very tired, but let me just get to the first question. We'll take it from there. What first sparked your interest in activism and political organizing?
I think the first issue that really sparked my interest was the climate crisis, and I quickly realized that we cannot stop the climate crisis without stopping imperialism, and that imperialism is the greatest destroyer of the environment in the world. And I think at first, as a kid in the United States, we aren't taught to care about any country except ourselves. But as my process of getting involved politically developed, I realized the necessity of fighting against US-led imperialism.
Right. And were there formative experiences growing up that shaped your worldview?
Well, I was 12 years old when Donald Trump was elected. And certainly I don't think Donald Trump is an aberration in the long, long history of fascist, genocidal, racist U.S. presidents. But there was a huge spark of political activity and protest and momentum in that moment. And I got involved at a very young age in different movements, whether it was the Women's March, the March for Our Lives against gun violence, and later the 2020 protests against police violence and racism and brutality. And I was involved in many different ways of protesting, of organizing. And as I know we're going to talk about, one of those very formative experiences was working on campaigns and really trying to work within the system like we are told to, and trying to use all these legal means to make change, and realizing over time that politicians don't work for the people. They work for weapons companies and oil companies, and that we need to use other tactics and strategies to make change.
Right. I'm just curious. You were a 12-year-old lady when Donald Trump came into office for the very, very first time. So that's such a young age. How would such a young girl get interested even in the politics of these things? You know, what familial background helped you shape that sort of worldview?
Well, I grew up in the United States, but my family is Irish-American.
Uh-huh.
I've never been to Ireland. My family and my extended family, we aren't very connected to our Irish heritage or background. But once I started to learn about settler colonialism in the U.S. and how this entire American identity, just like the Israeli settler Zionist identity, is a genocidal construct that is built upon the blood of the indigenous peoples of North America, just like the Zionist entity is built upon the blood of the Palestinian people.
Right.
And so connecting to where I'm truly from, where my family is truly from, and learning the fierce, militant history of resistance in Ireland to colonialism, to imperialism, and solidarity with the Palestinian cause, I think gave me a much, much deeper understanding of what struggle means.
Of course.
That it's something that my people have been partaking in for 800 years against colonialism.
So this must have also been kind of a trigger for you to go and study the heritage and the background and what happened with the Irish cause.
Exactly.
That's very interesting, of course. How did your early involvement in climate justice evolve into broader anti-imperialist work?
Like I said, I was part of a lot of climate organizing, of youth groups such as the Youth Climate Strike, and most of our actions were focused on asking politicians to change their policy. I participated in protests outside the White House, in the halls of Congress, begging our elected officials to listen to us to protect our future. And what I realized is that, asking politely the people in power to, make change that actually works against their own interests when these politicians' campaigns are funded by, all these corporations. And even many of the politicians who claim to be pro green energy, pro sustainability, such as Ed Markey, who I believe we're going to discuss in a bit, many of them talk this talk, but in reality they support the US military, which is the greatest polluter on planet Earth and has caused more environmental destruction and pollution than any other entity on planet Earth. And so what I realized is that imperialism is the primary contradiction in the world today, and that is what we need to focus our struggle on, because it encompasses every single issue. We can't have climate justice, we can't have women's rights, we can't have fair housing and any of the things we want to see while we live in a system of global exploitation and constant war and genocide, which is what the U.S. and Zionist and NATO empire feed off of.
Right. Now I'm going to talk about a little bit about the digital organizing and the youth movements that you were part of. What was it like helping build the Markeyverse and mobilizing Gen Z voters? Tell me about that.
First, let me just say it's crazy to hear that term said on Iranian TV, but that was A big effort.
I did my homework.
It was a big effort that I was involved in. I guess flash forward a couple of years after I got involved politically, the COVID pandemic hit. I was 15. I was a sophomore in high school, and suddenly I was stuck at home and locked inside. And so all of the organizing that I was doing shifted to the digital sphere. And a lot of adults and folks, you know, working in political organizations and campaigns didn't know how to use the tools of social media to mobilize young people in the way that young people who are just fluent in these platforms do. And we innovated really creative techniques to turn out young voters, and we really emphasized, you know, the candidate that we were supporting, Ed Markey, his stance on the Green New Deal, on progressive legislation that we supported. But in retrospect, you know, a lot of that legislation, it was simply to improve the lives of people living in the U.S. And that is predicated upon the continuation of the, you know, exploitation of the global South, the continuation of these wars and these genocides. And I still learned a lot from those experiences. You know, I've arrived at the politics I have today by trying all these different tactics and strategies and realizing, you know, what is futile versus what actually poses a threat to the ruling class and to our oppressors.
Right. And how do you see digital activism changing the landscape of political engagement?
To borrow a phrase from Fidel Castro, I think the battle of ideas is being waged on social media. And so we cannot write off the digital sphere. We cannot write off these platforms as important battlegrounds for us to wage ideological struggle, to counter imperialist propaganda. If we look at how, you know, the CIA and various imperialist agencies' investments and strategies and budgets have shifted over the past decades, increasingly so much is being invested on propagandizing through the digital sphere. You know, I think some really good examples are the regime change attempts in Cuba and in Iran, which attempt to portray themselves as, you know, organic, homegrown protest movements, but in reality are usually hashtags that were created in Washington, D.C. or Langley, Virginia. And that's why I'm so honored to be here, because what I do have is a platform where I can, you know, share the reality that I'm seeing. And while I don't claim to be an expert on anything, really, I do think that, you know, having young people from the United States see this reality and see, you know, the destruction of that is caused by the U.S. Zionist aggression, and to bring back those lessons to people in the U.S. To understand is absolutely essential.
Well, you know, Carla, we are living in a world with mainstream media having the final say in many, many of the events that we are surrounded by. How do you make yourself heard by the people around you while they are also all being bombarded by these mainstream media regarding the truth that you have uncovered?
I think that's another, you know, change that's been caused by the shift to digital platforms and social media is, although mainstream media is dominant in many ways, social media kind of democratizes how we receive news. And so regular people, yes, despite, you know, not working for the BBC or CNN or MSNBC, we can create a platform for ourselves. And I think often that is so much more compelling to our audience and to people who want to understand what is happening in the world, because frankly, mainstream media is very dishonest, and I think the average person is smart enough to realize that and to be disillusioned with it. And the fact is they ignore, you know, the vast majority of what is actually happening in the world. And so to create our own platforms and to elevate our own voices, and to speak the truth and without fear of being critical of power and of capital and of the imperialist ruling class is a great task, but I think it is one that we are seeing great progress on, and that consciousness is greatly shifting, especially among young people, and that is why the U.S. is trying to crack down on platforms like TikTok. That is why there is so much increasing censorship on platforms like Meta. I, of course, have been suspended many times on these platforms, but nevertheless, we have to continue to get our word out there, and we also need to be creative with how we disseminate ideas, because increasingly the censorship is only going to get worse, and we can't only be reliant on, you know, platforms that are controlled by our enemy.
Tell me something. I think within the American scene, and the issue of censorship, I think it's getting harder and harder to get a message across. Do you think it's always been like that, or it has become visibly worse? Which one do you think it is?
I think it's both. You know, I think freedom of speech has always been a lie. It's freedom of speech for those who the government feels
almost
like it.
Almost everywhere.
Yes, but I do think we've seen some qualitative escalations and crackdowns in both the U.S. and in the so-called United Kingdom and in Europe. I would point to, you know, the prescription of Palestine Action in the U.K. as a really extreme example. And, you know, our comrades there, they can't even say the words Palestine Action without potentially being charged with terrorism. And in the United States, you know, it's not quite there yet, but we are seeing so many people being fired from their workplaces, being kicked out of their universities for mere anti-Zionist speech. You know, the sacrifice of losing a job or losing a degree is minuscule compared to what Palestinians are sacrificing, compared to what Iranians are sacrificing, compared to what, you know, the people in the entire global south, and especially the Axis of Resistance countries, are experiencing under U.S. Zionist imperialism. And so, in my view, the best way to respond to the censorship is to double down and to be louder than ever, because the louder that we are, the harder it is for them to silence us. And they actually can't possibly, you know, repress us all if we are all speaking out in support of the Palestinian resistance. And so while I expect for there to be more, for there to be more lawfare, for there to be more attempts to crush free speech, nevertheless, I think we have to, you know, double down on our pro-resistance speech. And, you know, I wanna shout out especially the organization Sami Dune, which was designated in Canada and the U.S., and there were restrictions placed on it because they support the Palestinian resistance and because they fight for the freedom of Palestinian prisoners. And there was a lot of fear that was instilled in people in the movement, that if they even say, you know, I stand by Sami Nun because of this, during this, you know, phony designation, there's a lot of fear that that could, you know, even lead to people being targeted. But if we all stand together, and if we all, you know, stand in solidarity with people facing repression, it is impossible for them to be isolated. So, yes, I think it's important to use these moments of the intensified repression to build more unity in our principles of resistance and steadfastness.
Right. And after working on, well, of course, you worked on Senator Markey's campaign. What led you to your disenchantment with electoral politics?
I'd certainly been, you know, slowly getting disenchanted over time. I think my values and my principles were always far more radical than what could be expressed in an electoral campaign. But those were the opportunities that I found to get involved in change. And I realized, especially after taking part in protests in 2020, and then especially after what happened in Palestine in May 2021, the evictions in Sheikh Jarrah, the Six-Day War, and the bombardment of Gaza, that woke me up to the reality of imperialism and of the Zionist genocide against Palestine. And what I can only understand is my own complicity in that, up until the moment that I broke with the U.S. states and working within the Democratic Party. because the Democratic Party is, you know, just as genocidal and imperialist as the Republican Party. They just have different tactics and strategies through which they hold on to power. And like I said, I, you know, had worked for the senator, I'd worked for many politicians, and just seeing, you know, how horrific the bombardment was, and also how heroic the Palestinian response, the response of the resistance in Gaza was, firing back at the Zionist entity, I realized it was a moment where I had to make a choice that would define the trajectory for the rest of my life, which was to split with this liberal, reformist, social imperialist part of the, you know, movement that I was in, and to self-criticize, to use that as an opportunity to bring more people over to being pro-Palestine, to being anti-Zionist. We started a pressure campaign on the senator to try to get him to change his stance. And the failure of that to get him to change his stance also made me realize that even though that was someone I'd worked for and invested my labor in and helped him win the election, that my voice made no difference compared to checks from AIPAC or checks from Zionist donors or from weapons companies or his investment in U.S. interests. And so after that, I became much more involved in the pro-Palestine movement, and I basically completely left electoral politics, and from there on out spoke very vocally about how I feel like electoralism is ultimately, you know, counterinsurgent, and that we need to make a firm, clean break and to work outside of these institutions to, you know, create something new, to build an alternative to empire.
Right. And of course, you were involved with politics for a while. Did you find different voices? Like, for example, what we hear from Senator Bernie Sanders. Did you see that sort of voices often within the politics, within the mechanics and the machination of the mechanics of politics in the U.S.? Such voices, are they just rare, or there are still more than just one person in there thinking the way he does?
I think that I see, you know, I see Bernie Sanders, I see Ed Markey, I see AOC and the Squad. Even, you know, Zohran Mamdani, who just won this election in New York. I still see this progressive, or someone call like Democratic Socialist wing of the Democratic Party. I see it as a concerted effort to try to bring young people back into the Democratic Party because they have lost so much support because of Palestine. Because young people saw the Democratic Party carry out a Holocaust for 2 years, live streamed before our own eyes. No wonder people aren't coming out and weren't voting for Kamala Harris. And I think the Democrats realize that, and they realize they need younger, more progressive people who will say Free Palestine as a slogan to try to get people back into voting them and working in the party. But these people are not anti-Zionist. They're not anti-imperialist. They constantly defend Israel's right to exist. They constantly condemn the Palestinian resistance and the entire axis of resistance. They constantly promote, you know, regime change and sanctions against Iran. And so I think while it's positive to heighten the contradictions within within Congress, within the Democratic Party, within the U.S. government, electing these politicians is not a means to an end, and we have to be very, very careful with, you know, how working within these institutions might force us to compromise our principles. And so that's why I'm very openly critical of them.
Right, I see. And do you believe progressive candidates can still drive meaningful change within the system?
I think at the local level, that argument could be made, but I think, as I just argued, you know, I think fundamentally,
Kind of got my answer.
Yeah, it's I see it as, you know, a part of like the counterinsurgency, and I think when we have these huge ruptures and shifts of consciousness, like after the Al-Aqsa flood, there is a huge burst of, you know, anti-imperialist consciousness in the United States. And I think one of the responses by the Zionists, by the imperialists, by the ruling class is to try to capture that energy and to funnel it into something that is fundamentally not challenging or threatening to U.S. empire. And so they would much rather have us be working on a campaign than, say, doing direct action against a weapons company.
Carla Walsh, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.
Of course. And thank you for being with us on another soap. Thank you so much, and goodbye until next time.
Iranian news, Iranian culture, Iranian voice. This is IRIB English Radio.
چیزی که انسان را مطمئن می کند ذکر خدا، ذکر الله تطمئن القلوب.
Be aware, the hearts find rest in Allah's remembrance.
Spring of truth.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome back to the Spring of Truth. This is Muhammad Liaqat Abbas, your host, and today we are going to speak a quote from Imam Khomeini. Today we are going to speak a beautiful quote from Imam Khomeini, where the Imam says, Islam wants to build humans. Islam wants to safeguard independence, and it is not possible to safeguard independence by devotion to the material world. A beautiful quote which has a lot of branches connected to number of ahadith and number of verses of the Holy Quran. So over here, if we look at a hadith from Amir al-Mu'mineen, Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib alayhi salam, the Imam says, be in the world as if you were a traveler. So you must have heard this hadith where the Imam says, I'm just paraphrasing it for a better understanding and easier communication, where the Imam says, think you have just got down of the caravan in which you were traveling, and no sooner you sat under the shade of the tree, the head of the caravan tells you to stand up. This is not the place to rest, and you have to get on the vehicle and we have to move on. So this is the example of the world. This is the time period which we are gonna stay in this world. So Islam wants to build human beings, okay? If the Imam says over here that Islam is not a religion of just worshipping. It wants us to become humans. Why does someone say so? Over here, Imam Khomeini is pointing to a very important aspect the religion wants to do, and that is building human beings. And we are created in the first place to worship, and through worship, we are going to become human beings. So, Islam wants to safeguard independence, and it is not possible to safeguard independence by devotion to the material world. This is something which is very important. True freedom isn't wealth. It is a spiritual and moral state built by God-conscious people. So, a soul chained to material desires can never ever be free. And a nation of such souls can never be independent. It is very important to understand this quote, that it is not possible to safeguard independence by devotion to the material world.
Ya Rabbana, salli ala Tuhan Nabi wa alihi.
Brothers and sisters, we are not going to live long in this world. This is a truth we have to understand, we have to accept, and we have to live. Meaning, if we are living in today's world, we have to live in such a manner that we are going to die very soon. So if you are dependent on the material world, on the material stuff, of course we all are dependent to some extent, but few people cross the lines. So they, for everything, they are dependent on the material world. They don't have the concept of tawakkul in their lives. They don't rely on the Ahlul Bayt alayhim salam. They don't seek help from the Holy Quran. When Islam says, Islam wants to safeguard independence, so I'm just paraphrasing the quote of the Imam. Imam Hussein alayhi salam says, you are created free. So live in this world like a free man, in an independent manner.
As-salamu alaykum wa rahmatullah.
There was a spring of truth, a selection of Imam Khomeini's viewpoints.
Never forget to say, La ilaha
the gate of knowledge. Exegesis and interpretations of the supremely eloquent sermons, letters, and sayings of the Commander of the Faithful, Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib, peace be upon him.
Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. Welcome to IRIB English Radio. The program is The Gate of Knowledge, and this is your host, Sayyid Salman Naqavi, and we are discussing the narrations of Imam Ali, the Master of the Faithful, from the Nahj al-Balagha. And the narration we're going to talk about today is where the Master of the Faithful says, صدر العاقل صندوق سره والبشاشة حبالة المودة والاحتمال قبر العيوب. So, as all his other very eloquent sayings, this is another very important and eloquent one, where he says, it also comprises of three parts. The first one is صدر العاقل صندوق سره, the bosom of a wise person, the chest of a wise person is the safe of his secrets, which means that a person who is wise keeps his secrets to himself. He does not divulge them to people who are not relevant, at least. So this is a very important thing. Kitmanu sir, taking care and not disclosing one's secrets and personal issues. And the second part is wal bashashatu hibalatul mawadda, where he says that when we deal with the people, we should be dealing in a very cheerful manner. Al bashasha means to be cheerful, and this causes the bond of friendship to increase. We shall continue in the next section.
Nahj al-Balagha, also known as the Peak of Eloquence, is a compilation of sermons, letters, and sayings attributed to Imam Ali, peace be upon him, the cousin and son-in-law of the Prophet Muhammad, peace and greetings be upon him and his pure household. Regarded as one of the most authoritative sources of Islamic wisdom and knowledge, this book reflects the profound insight and spiritual teachings of Imam Ali, peace be upon him, on various matters, including ethics, morality, governance, and spirituality. The eloquence and wisdom exhibited in this speech and teachings within Nahj al-Balagha have made it a timeless masterpiece that continues to inspire and guide Muslims and non-Muslims alike in their pursuit of truth and enlightenment. All of this is presented to you in the program Gate of Knowledge on Iran Radio.
Welcome back to IRIB English Radio, The Gate of Knowledge. We are discussing the hadith of Imam Ali alayhi salatu wasalam. As he says, صدر العقل صندوق سره والبشاشة حبالة المودة والاحتمال قبر العيوب. So we were talking about the second part. If we meet people with cheerfulness, in a very nice manner, polite manner, that will increase our friendship, and the bonding of friendship will increase and be strengthened. And the third one is wal ihtimal qabr al ayub, having forbearance in the face of the shortcomings of others. If people we are faced with a situation where we find people to have shortcomings, and we are patient with them, and we take care of them, of their shortcomings, and we do not divulge them, and we bear that difficult situation, it will actually cause our own shortcomings to be put to the grave, or the shortcomings of others will also be covered up, and they will be as if they have been buried in the ground. So these three parts are very important. A wise person has to take care of the secrets which belong to himself, or they are part of the cause for which he is struggling. And one of the important things that we have to bear in mind, as if we are faced with a situation as if the Islamic Republic of Iran was faced with the onslaught of the Zionist enemy in the 12-day war, the most important factor which had to be kept in mind was the safeguarding and the protection of secrets, especially state secrets. And that was a lesson learned, that we have to be very careful about what we talk about, even with our friends, our colleagues, and especially on the social media. Today, they are all spies which are there. So we have to be very careful about that. So we shall continue in this last part of this episode.
Sayyid Razi, also known as Sharif Razi, was a reserved scholar and historian who played a crucial role in compiling the sermons, letters, and sayings of Imam Ali, peace be upon him, into the book Peak of Eloquence. His dedication to preserving the teachings and wisdom of Imam Ali, peace be upon him, has ensured that future generations have access to the profound insights and spiritual guidance found within Nahjul Balagha. All of this is presented to you in the program Gate of Knowledge on Iran Radio.
Welcome back to IRB English Radio. We are talking about the narrations of Imam Ali, from which we can draw lessons for our contemporary times. And we are talking about the Sadrul Aql Sunduqu Sirri. We have to be very careful about the sacred secrets individually and of the society, of our family, and especially the state has to be very much safeguarded and supported safeguarded and protected. Then he says, وَالْبَشَّاشَةُ حِبَالَةُ الْمَوَدَّةِ. If we want to increase the love between ourselves, between our companions, between our family members, we have to be very careful in how we behave with them. We should be very cheerful and forthcoming, and we should meet others with a very big smile on our faces, and so that people feel pleased to meet with us and to engage with us. And we have in the third part, it is being impressed that in our engagements with others and other companions, family members, in the society, we have to keep continuing to cover up the shortcomings of others, and we should become their confidants instead of being starting to divulge their secrets and their shortcomings, and to even make them feel bad and shame them by bringing out these things. We should try to contain them. We should bear with the shortcomings of others, so those they can be, you know, put to the buried in the grave, in a grave. They are completely removed. If we want someone to change, then we want to help him in achieving that change. So this is a very important message in our dealings with society and companions in society. So this is your host, Sayyid Salman Naqvi, saying goodbye. And we shall be again meeting with you in the next episode on the Gate of Knowledge at IRIB English Radio.
سجد